Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Steve McQuillan and CFO Stephen King of Avingtraz, a specialist engineering group supplying niche products and services into the infrastructure, energy, nuclear, defense, and transport sectors. Oh, medical as well. Sorry about that. Yep. So welcome, gents.
Hi, Paul. Good to see you again.
Yeah, well, big congrats on today's inline first half results and positive outlook. But we've always got to dig into the details there. I don't suppose, Steve, Emmy, you could take us through what the current demand picture's like at the coalface in your sort of like key markets.
Yeah, still really positive. We're really happy with the demand picture, actually. Steve will cover order cover in a minute, actually, I think, with some of the other main numbers. So I wouldn't pull that forward. But we're still seeing very strong metrics around what's happening, and it's driven by different things in different markets. But nuclear, it's obviously about the fact that people want to keep things going that they've already got, so it's life extension and decommissioning. It's about, you know, those decommissioning programs ramping up. In oil and gas, it's about a revival in oil and gas over the last couple of years, so we're seeing more demand there. And of course, in defence, where we have stuff in defence, then it's pretty obvious what's been happening worldwide and why that's getting a bit more attention. So, you know, there's demand drivers that are positive for us in most markets. And of course, on the other side, in medical, where we're not ramping yet, because we're, as we'll come back to, I'm sure, we've got new product coming down the pipe, but that's progressing nicely. And there's very strong pull from the markets for the medical products that we're developing.
Okay, good. And one issue that seems to have been raised quite a lot in terms of the first half sort of trading updates for a lot of industrial firms has been destocking. Have you seen anything of that at all in your operations?
No, Steve will comment as well probably, but it's a known issue for us, Paul. I'm glad you asked the question, because, you know, people might be supposing it might be an issue for us, but it really isn't, because the vast majority of our products are made to order. So, you know, there's nothing to destock. Our customers don't end up with dozens of our products on the shelf. They might have one odd spare pump or motor or whatever the hell, but they don't have loads of them. So there's nothing to destock in our case. It's a known issue for us.
Okay. And what about the sort of the nuclear sector? Because obviously this is a real area of growth, secular growth, in terms of the life extensions, the decommissioning at Sellafield. We've got that £900 million, you know, contract ultimately, which may come out for sort of storage boxes. And we've got the new nuclear with TerraPower. Can you just give us a quick couple of words on how you've seen that developing? And must be a big growth engine for the group.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it's across the piece there, actually. So there's lots of people interested in life extension. We've seen new contracts coming out in the US in particular, and in the EU on life extension. We've got the decommissioning piece, as you say, where we'll come back to it, no doubt. But the big contract we've already got with Sellafield, with potentially more to come. Importantly there, we've also won a first contract with Magnox, which is the other main decommissioning body in the UK. They've just rebranded themselves to Nuclear Restoration Services, NRS. But people will know it as Magnox, I think. And they're decommissioning all those power stations as well. And they need a bunch of boxes to put waste in, the same as Sellafield. It's actually a different design, but same difference. And that's going to be a huge opportunity over the coming years also. So decommissioning is a very strong forward possibility for us.
Have you got enough capacity to do that, to that kind of volume?
Well, we'll have to build more eventually, but at the moment, for the next few years, yes. But as it builds more, we'll have to build more capacity. But that'll be a high quality problem, as our chairman would say.
Absolutely.
And you know, as you mentioned on new build, you know that what we're really interested there is not so much Hinkley Point C and whatnot, but we're interested in all the SMR activity. There's loads of companies working on different SMR concepts, and we're in touch with several of them. But the most advanced one where we're getting orders already is TerraPower, whereas you've seen we've had a $10 million order to design and make prototypes of the pumps they require for their SMR concept, which they're in the process of starting to build the first one of those. So that's the exciting piece there. But there'll be more to come there, and more to come potentially from other SMR designers and manufacturers later.
Yeah, and presumably these kind of groups, particularly sort of Bill Gates' TerraPower, and obviously Sellafield, if they're coming to Avingtraz, then obviously you've got something there. There aren't that many competitors in this market, presumably.
No, in terms of the boxes at Montby Sellafield, we're the only people who can make them. They had another supplier, but they pulled out. So we're the only people who can make it at the moment. And in terms of TerraPower, yeah, they obviously liked what they saw when they did some earlier work with us and decided that they really liked the combination of the design capability, manufacturing expertise, but also agility. Another thing that Avingtraz businesses are very good at is agility. We can always run faster than our big customers, and they generally like that because that allows us to keep their program on track if they'll let us do that way in terms of the agility we can show. And that's what TerraPower certainly saw from the first interactions with us, that we could run fast for them, which is what they want to do.
Yeah, and just moving to the sectors, in terms of the transport, with the blast-proof doors for HS2, obviously Rishi Sunak, for all his wisdom, decided to cancel that sort of the northern leg, sort of like 6 months ago. Has that impacted at all the operations?
No, and it was quite irritating to see the share price go down in the back of that notification, because it didn't affect us at all. In fact, we've since won another contract with HS2, so the number's even bigger now than it was before. And there's some in the pipeline that we hope will win some of them as well. So HS2 is still increasing in value for us, not decreasing. So yeah, it's a little bit irritating to have a negative impact from that, because there is no negative impact on Booth from that decision. I mean, there might be one in 20 years' time or something, but not now. So
Okay, well, putting all that positive demand outlook together then, Steve Kay, can you take us through the numbers? Because I did see they've got a big jump in your top line there. So give us a sort of like a quick view of the top line financials.
Yeah, okay, certainly. I guess just going back on to what Steve was saying earlier about order book, or you were touching on order book. I mean, our order book cover for FY24 that we're in now is over 95%, compared with 90% this time last year. And for FY25, so next year, we're up at about just over 60% compared with 55%. So a good 5% probably improvement, showing the sentiment of the chairman saying, you know, we've got some strong order cover. It also helps that we've got those long-term orders from Sellafield, HS2, et cetera, to give that base demand. But yeah, big number changes here. Of course, underneath those numbers, there's always a bit of a story to tell, because we've made two acquisitions in the period, so I'll try and strip those out. So there you see the revenue going up 15.2 million. So as you say, 30.4% increase. But underlying, the AES division still went up nearly 25%, and that's stripping out the acquisition of Slack and Par. So that's a real positive. Medical was steady, but an underlying AES again was 25% increase in revenue.
And what's driven that then, Steve? Which particular area? Is it nuclear? Is it sort of like transport, oil and gas, and all that kind of stuff?
It's kind of all of them, Paul. There's not one of them that's going backwards. There's kind of all of them.
Fantastic. What about the margin, Steve Kay?
Well, gross profit margin there is something that is important to us, but there's always a story about long-term contracts and recovery of overheads, etc. So whilst we obviously strive to move that forward, it's moved down slightly in the period, mainly because we've done more OE. The demand for OE has increased quite significantly, in particular maybe in the oil and gas sector, possibly to do with some of the tax plannings for some of these North Sea operators. But both aftermarket and OE have increased significantly in the period. So it's not as if it's a deterioration in OE. And as you know, aftermarket is one of our key things. We'll probably come back to that later. But EBITDA, even there, the EBITDA there has increased, significantly, nearly 1 million. But underlying NAS itself has increased 20%. So, 25% increase in revenue, 20% increase in adjusted EBITDA. What's not to like? And that's after stripping out the acquisitions. And Slack and Par, whilst it was only break even at EBITDA, if you remember, we said we'd hope to get that by the year end. So we're slightly ahead there. So the next task is getting it to break even at EBIT. So lots of positive things, which drive down to the diluted EPS moving positive. Progressive dividend moving slightly forward, as we've always said. We're never going to be the yield stock, although we're getting a better yield stock with a slightly subdued share price at the present moment in time. That's the only positive I can think of. And then the other big movement there is that this net debt, okay? It's the question a lot of people will ask. Well, wow, you've moved from 2.2 million net cash of 13 million to net debt of 2.2. We forecast that, and that's mainly or predominantly because of the two acquisitions. We spent 13.7 million on those two acquisitions, and I'm sure we'll come back to the payback in a period. But that's predominantly.
How's the Slack and Par acquisition going, the integration?
I mean, as I said to you a minute ago, the Slack and Par is slightly ahead of probably where we thought. You've got to remember this was a pretty broken business, one of the classic Avingtrans play. We bought it from the administrator because the pension scheme had started pulling it over the cliff. It had some commercial issues. But underneath, it was a well-invested factory. Underneath, the engineering there, as a mechanical engineer myself, was absolutely incredible. The tolerances they have on these gear pumps, unbelievable. But it just needed a little bit of help, some cash injection, some refocusing on commercialization. The administrator obviously helped us to right size the business. So yeah, I mean, it's been really positive. Obviously, one of the things we need to look at is we're getting the right price for what we're doing there because of the incredible engineering that's there. Engineers never put the right price, they just want to solve the solution. We know that. That's why you have commercial guys. And then reinvigorating the agent network. So a lot of positive things, a lot of hard work though, Paul, as always with the case. And this year, as I say, hopefully break even at EBIT, and then next year 10% EBITDA on run rate 12 to 15 million, I would expect. So pretty quick turnaround, but 15% is our target margin for all of these businesses.
And it's pretty smooth turnaround so far, and it's following exactly the classic Avingtrans playbook.
Yeah,
Correct.
I was gonna say it's a lot hallmark of the Steve's sort of like restructuring magic there. So
Well, it's not just the Steve's. There's a lot of great people in our
plenty of good
teams.
people in the business now who know what they're doing with that, so they're doing most of it.
Okay, just on that cash flow, Steve K, though, in terms of the working capital, you just give us a few words on how you saw that, because you did mention it in the statement. You'd seen some supply chain issues that may have pushed up your inventories and your receivables balance, etc.
Okay. I mean, no one ever likes to see a positive movement in working cap or negative movement in working cap, whichever way you look at it. I mean, and there was an underlying 5.5 million outflow of working cap. However, let's just take a step back. We just increased revenue by 30%, as we said earlier, and 25% in the underlying AES. So you wouldn't expect an increase in working capital. Now, if you worked on the general assumptions that it went up 20% on the balance there, we had 32 million at 31st of May. So 25% on that would more than increase it to where it is. However, you know, there's more things at play here. If you buy a broken business, you have to import working cap. Plus, these some of these long-term contracts that we've been told we'll talk about. You know, they have milestones in there, and sometimes it's just the milestones either side of the year and can make a big difference with your cash and working capital. So yes, look, we're working really hard on that working cap balance. Yes, we don't like to see such a large increase there. And you know, we'll be working in the second half to get that reduced. But it can be seen as a positive as well as a negative. As I say, someone's got to fund the 30% increase, an underlying 25% increase in AES revenue.
Yeah, and I mean, I was doing the numbers, and your year end, I think working capital as a percentage of sales for the last period end was roughly around about, I think it was 26%, and it's just ticked up to 28 or 29. So we're only talking just marginal on the percentage in total. You know, if you look at working capital as a percentage of sales. Okay, then, Steve Kay. Now, the other big news since we last spoke is obviously the creation of the Advanced Engineering Division. Just stepping back in terms of the strategic approach, what's the sort of the thought process behind doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two key drivers of that, Paul. One's for investors, so I'll start with that since we're talking to investors, which is about giving them real clarity on how the mature engineering businesses are doing versus the much bigger investment, relatively speaking, in the medical setup. So it makes it very clear if you're just looking at one versus the other. And other people have done the same thing, actually, to try and get that level of clarity. So we're kind of cribbing off other people's playbook there, I guess. But secondly, what we really want to do is drive exits now. We've got a number of the businesses in advanced engineering that are now mature enough to be exited. And we've got a market circumstance coming up now, hopefully over the next year to 18 months, where that becomes more feasible again. It's been difficult recently, but it looks like that's becoming more feasible to see those deals going through. And so what we wanted to do was to make sure that we drove towards that with maximum efficiency and effectiveness by putting our A team on the whole lot, basically. So that's what we've done. We've got the strongest team now in that division. We're able to drive towards those exits, and that's what it's going to be about for them over the next, I say, hopefully, year to 18 months. I mean, can't guarantee that we'll exit anything in that time frame because it does depend on the market and how we get on with the exit processes. But it does seem that we're getting to a point now where some of the businesses in that division can be exited in that time frame.
I guess also, I mean, I've noticed on the certain contracts, you have multiple of one of your companies supplying into a customer. Does it also help bring and unify a sort of like complete solution? So maybe into TerraPower or alternatively, if you're aftermarket services.
Yes, but it's a secondary effect because the teams work well together in that sort of thing before anyway, Paul. So yeah, it's not unhelpful, but it's not a primary reason for doing it.
Yeah, and what's the sort of the current thinking on the aftermarket? Is it really just keep hitting that as much as you can in terms of creating that recurring revenue stream and higher margin business?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, there's no bad thing about aftermarket. The more of it we can make, the better. And you know, we've got although relatively still small scale, for example, at Booth and Ormandy, where when we bought both of them, they're virtually no aftermarket. Both of them are developed quite nice little aftermarket businesses now. They'll never be as big as Hayward Tyler's, which is, you know, more than half the sales are aftermarket. But they, you know, if they can get to 10 to 20%, as we've probably said before, then that gives you really good extra business and extra margin. And of course, connects you to the end users in a nice way, which means that you're more connected for future business. So there's nothing bad about aftermarket. It's all to the good.
Now, but what I thought was also quite interesting is you're looking at potential opportunities to do aftermarket services for third-party OE equipment, aren't you?
Yeah, and we've been quite successful in that already in some of the businesses, particularly Hayward Tyler, have done well at that. And they're doing repairs and refurbishments of various different manufacturers' pumps that are brought to us. And again, it's about that agility point. It's because we can go faster than other guys, and that's why they bring stuff to us rather than send it back to the original people that made it. And that stood us in good stead, actually. And again, brings you then other more business because people see that you're good at what you do, basically. So that's been very effective. It's not the biggest component of what we're doing in HT, but it's very effective. And we'd like to try that elsewhere as well.
Yeah, okay. All right, we're just putting a bow on the sort of the traditional sort of like the core old engineering type of businesses. And just on that land you've got out in Luton, Steve Kay, can you just tell us about the latest on that one? Because, again, it was mentioned in the RNS as a potential opportunity going forward.
Well, this is really is a saga, Paul. I mean, I think we talk about it every 6 months, and it's frustrating. I mean, the market, the whole property market has been against us, I guess, from when we start just after we started this whole process. And we've been through a few plays with a few players who haven't come to fruition. The latest is we've got a very interested party who has more credentials than someone we've used in the past. But it's still early days, Paul. It's still early days. The market is starting to come back, and these guys know how long it takes to get these projects to fruition, which is why they're starting now. It's not about next year or probably even the year after. It's further along. They've got to get through the planning, and this is buy to rent typically, etc. So it's still going to be a long process. I may have a few more grey hairs by the time we get there. But it's a bit frustrating, and it's not the thing. We've got to do. We can do our knitting. It's icing on the cake if we get there in the end. That's all I'll say. The underlying AES, results and the medical excitement of the next commercialization are the things we need to concentrate. Property's great, but we can't control that market.
Okay, good. Well, I would highlight just before we move on to the medical side, just to investors. I mean, if you look Avingtraz on a sum of the parts valuation and just put a modest sort of like 12 to 14 times EBIT on that core advanced engineering division, you get between around about 425p to over 500p just on that core business compared to a share price. I think it's less than 350 now. So all the what we're going to talk about now, which is a really exciting division as well, the healthcare, all that's for free and built in, and the Luton's there for free and built in. So Steve, M, could you just take us through what the latest is with the likes of Adaptix and Magnetica with the 3D X-rays and the small
MRI.
form MRIs?
Yeah, so both businesses are making really good progress. What we've done is, Paul, we've put in some additional material in an appendix, so in the main presentation, so that we might look at one of those two of those slides if you want.
I'll
But
bring one up. Yep.
both businesses making really good progress against their milestones, and the key for both of these businesses now is about productionizing the products, commercializing the product, and so it's all about how do we get production up to volume and how do we get sales up to volume in both cases. Well, we've put, for example, into the appendix there, so what our best estimates now are of the different, and this is just for Adaptix, actually, not for Magnetica.
This is just for Adaptix.
So that's the different components of what they could go after. The main three they're working on at the moment is non-destructive evaluation, veterinary imaging, and orthopedic imaging. That's the products they're working on. They've also got chest X-ray and dental, which they could go after later. We're not developing those products at the moment, but they're possible to do with the technology. So there's a lot of potential here, actually. And you can see that, that's the addressable market. Obviously, we wouldn't get a whole of that market, I mean, even a big slice of it. But even if we only got 5% or 10% of it, we'd have very sizable businesses, both for Adaptix and Magnetica. And the reaction we're getting, if you go into one or two further forward, Paul, I
Yeah,
think
sure. Do you
the
want
vet one.
the NDR or the vet?
The vet one, if you go to the vet one first, you can just see a typical image there in the corner there, and people can blow that up for themselves and see that the quality of that image is amazing. And of course, remember, an Adaptix product is a 3D image, so you scan right through it. And you can see that in the commentary at the bottom of this slide that some of the vets using it talk about how fantastic it is. And one of them said that, it used to take them 45 minutes to do a dental scan on a pet, and now it takes them 10 minutes. So they've got lots more time to do other stuff with the pet or do other scans or whatever. So it's a tremendous workflow tool for them, particularly in the dental area. But because what you're getting is if you do a 3D X-ray scan, you get multiple slices through the image, and therefore instead of doing two or three or four scans, you only do one, and then you've got the whole dental set actually. So that's why it's a boon to them and why they like it so much. And we're seeing similar kind of commentary from the NDE customers and prospective orthopedic customers as well. So, and we put that stuff into the presentation in the appendix so investors can look at that at their leisure. And in fact, what we're going to do is release at the same time. You'll see that on the website too, that there's kind of even longer versions of these presentations for Adaptix and Magnetica for investors to look through so they can see how we're doing and what progress we're making. But very, very pleased with progress on both businesses. And on the Magnetica side, it's about 510K. That's their next big milestone. They've made really good progress as well in terms of the products that they're working on. But their next milestone is 510K, and that's going pretty well too. Our only concern there is how long is a piece of string with the FDA to approve the product, because we can't control that. We're anticipating that being over the summer, but we're not certain of that, obviously, because we can't completely control what they're doing. Because, for example, one of the things they've done recently is to increase that. I'm not surprised they've done this. Is to increase the cybersecurity requirements for all new imaging products, and we've had to do a bunch of extra work to make sure we're compliant with that. And that's fine. We've done good work on it. The guys are quite happy with what they've done, but that's caused us some extra work. But quite rightly too, actually, when you think about what's happening in the world, cybersecurity wise.
Yeah, as anecdotal evidence, actually, that there's a real market in that vet dental sector. We've got two cats, and my wife's just spent £1,000 having their teeth looked at the local vet, and that's quite a cheap vet. So a couple of quick scans would have certainly been funded by just our bill very easily. That's no doubt about it.
I mean, vets incredible. The cost now for vets, it's all been driven by reimbursement and insurance policies and all this kind of business. So, and of course, it's been driven by the bigger groupings of vets. And we've got test units, trial units at three of the bigger groupings in the UK now. People like IVC, Medivets, those kind of people are looking at our products, and so they're very much targets for us because they have hundreds of vets. But we're also targeting the independent vets as well, of course. But the bigger groupings now have hundreds each of vets around the country, and some of them internationally in Europe and beyond. So those are the kind of folks we want to be working with on the vet side.
Oh, and just in terms of that new market sector, which I hadn't appreciated, which is in the NDE, is it the non-destructive side, or what? I can't remember what you actually called it, but essentially where you look at sort of like inspecting precision components, maybe in the aerospace with Doughty and people like. Can you just talk through that? Because that's a real new application area for investors anyway.
The Adaptix had been working on this a bit before we bought them, but we've continued to invest in that after we bought them because we see some really good potential there. There's several different possibilities of what we might do with the kit for these kinds of applications. So as you say, some of it's about scanning 3D components in more detail than they can do with 2D X-ray or ultrasonics or anything like that. And it's showing them defects that are deep in the components. That we they might not have seen otherwise. And I mean, some of these components are really big, like 3 meter long propellers and stuff like that. So, and we can shove it through the machine and sort of and look at what all the defects are across the whole lot. Excuse me, but you can also look at things like counterfeit chips. So if you put silicon chips under one of these scanners, you can spot immediately which ones are counterfeit because they have a different sort of signature coming off them than the real ones. So taking out those kind of issues security wise. And of course, the security forces are interested in it as well for a variety of reasons that I probably can't talk about. But there's a variety of applications here. We haven't quite decided what are the front runners for NDE yet, but there's quite an exciting area of possibilities there. Eventually, we'll whittle that down because, as is always the case for these kinds of businesses at the start of what they're doing, they've got too many opportunities and you need to whittle them down. Otherwise, they chase too many things in too many different directions.
Would you license any of that technology out? Because obviously you can't follow everything, so you have to choose your horses you're going to back internally, but also you don't want to lose that potential total addressable market.
Yeah, correct. And so that, I think that's exactly right, Paul. We'll end up in the position where some of it will be licensed rather than us trying to do it because there's existing players in the market and we'd have to displace them anyway. So it might be better to license the technology for them to develop that particular segment of the marketplace.
And you might do that, I guess, in the MRI side as well, when you've got the FDA approval, as in like ultimately anyway, outside of your core veterinary and small form sort of like, orthopedics.
It's possible. There have been potential industrial applications of the MRI technology as well. And you're right, we probably end up just making part of that, a core part of that, and licensing out the rest or whatever. That's potentially there. But we're not focused on that in MRI at all at the moment. We're fully focused just on
Yeah, of
orthopedics.
course.
Because, of course, the problem for these businesses is that they're doing great stuff, but they're still relatively small businesses with only kind of 60 people or something like that in each business. And there's a limit to what they can do bandwidth-wise, so we have to focus them down on a small number of things to make sure we get over the line with the primary targets.
I think what the important bit for sort of investors is you've got some really you know, excellent technology, which is all patented. And it's a bit like that iceberg. What you can see is a lot smaller than what's under the ground that actually might well come to fruition. And you may decide to monetize that externally in terms of licensing and royalties, rather than actually go in your core markets.
Indeed. And I think, you know, that's to come. But once we get the core working, then we can obviously be talking. I mean, there are discussions going on with interested parties about these things, but early days, I would say. Okay. And still more work to do.
Okay, brilliant. Well, just coming to the end then, Steve Kay, could you just take us through sort of the outlook? Because I did notice in with the analyst estimates, we're looking for sort of like continued advanced engineering, you know, sort of on track and growth. But then we've got a bit more, we're picking up the investment, aren't we, in your healthcare and your medical side for obvious reasons?
Yes, certainly. So, I mean, the AES division, you can probably expect to see, you know, the same again in the second half. Hopefully a little bit more, but, you know, the same again would be quite nice. Especially another 25% increase in the revenue. And obviously Slack and Pile will start becoming to more mature and additive to the business. But the other big thing in the second half is we only owned Adaptix for a couple of months in the first half. So there is some short-term commercialization costs that you can't capitalize. There's some investment, as Steve just mentioned, in the product development still. So there's a significant investment in that second half and ongoing investment in Magnetica. However, you know, that's, we've got the facilities in place to do that. And of course, the AES division are going to be generating some cash in that second half to offset that. So we're pretty comfortable with the city expectations on net debt. And it does slightly drag down the optical overall EPS, EBITDA, etc. But again, this is one of the reasons why we've split it into the mature business and the new Magnetica Adaptix business, so we can quite simply see or try to tell that story to investors. You know, AES is going from strength to strength, going to win some more new contracts and all those exciting things, and then nuclear and energy sectors. The next 6 months, 12 months is going to be an investment in the medical side, and the short term horizon of 12 to two years is, you know, or hopefully maybe an IPO, maybe in Nasdaq, maybe on AIM, who knows? But it's certainly exciting times for the board and investors.
Yeah, and you might also have some sort of like proceeds in from, you know, ultimately sort of like realizations from your advanced engineering and even Luton, you never know.
Yeah, no,
I'm not going to guarantee that, Paul.
I think Luton might be 18 months out, as Steve says, just at the start of a process again there, really. But in that time frame, potentially sales of units are on the cards because we are preparing them for that possibility, some of the business units. That's why we've organised ourselves in AES to drive that, as we said. So can't guarantee that's going to happen within 18 months, but it's not unlikely. In fact, it is likely that we'll dispose of something in that time frame.
Great. Okay, well, brilliant, guys. Big congrats again on the first half results and in-line update for the full year. So look forward in chatting again in about sort of 3 to 6 months' time.
Super.
Thanks, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up.
When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.